Although we sometimes may not perceive it when we read the Bhagavad Gita, Shankaracharya has described the Bhagavad Gita as a river of nectar flowing from the mouth of Sri Krishna to Arjuna. And we are very fortunate because we can also get a taste of that nectar. Prabhupada had recommended that we know this Bhagavad Gita inside and outside because it's our basic preaching book. And he said that we should know the Bhagavad Gita as thoroughly as the Christians know the Bible. That means we should know it inside and out. Now, we often, or usually, know the Bhagavad Gita only in its isolated parts. We know that there's something about karma yoga in the Bhagavad Gita. We know there's something about Ashtanga yoga. We know that the universal form is spoken of. What chapter is the universal form in? 11th chapter. We know that. We know that it says sarvadamam prityaja. We know that in one chapter, somewhere in the middle, it says that Krishna says, I am the sun, I am the moon, of fish I am the shark. We know little bits and pieces like that. We know the henos vinyata dehe komaram jovanam jarada, we are not our body. And the Bhagavad Gita says all these different things. But usually what we're lacking is an understanding of the Bhagavad Gita as a whole, as a cohesive unit, as it begins and as the philosophy develops from the first chapter to the 18th chapter. So this is the goal of this course, to teach Bhagavad Gita as it is, as a cohesive unit, as the philosophy flows and develops from the first chapter onward. And it actually is a cohesive unit. Now, I wish that after studying the Bhagavad Gita, actually when I graduated from the university in January of 1969, Prabhupada told me to study Bhagavad Gita. So I've actually been studying it for many, many, many years now. And I cannot say that I know it completely. Certainly not, because these words are transcendental and they have unlimited meanings. But gradually, I can say, the more I do know the Bhagavad Gita, the more that one gets the vision to see through the Bhagavad Gita. And the Bhagavad Gita is the practical preaching book and is the practical book that governs our external activities. So it is essential that we study Bhagavad Gita and know how it fits together. And we will find, not that we will understand Bhagavad Gita completely, again, it is too big to fit into anyone's finite brain. But by studying it, we will get a better idea of it, and a better idea of it, and still better idea of it, and we still will not know it completely. But whatever idea we can get, and however we can improve our understanding, it will greatly help our practical preaching and the practical application of the Bhagavad Gita to our own lives. So I don't think that anyone after finishing this course will know the Bhagavad Gita, have it in the palm of their hand. It is said that Jiva Goswami had the Bhagavatam in his hand. He had it completely within his grasp like that. So it is a goal that we should know Bhagavad Gita. But maybe some of you are very, very great scholars and have Shruti-dar photographic memories, and you'll be able to remember everything. But if not, don't be discouraged. I find that when I am, there's a lot of information, and I find that the more I teach it and the more I study it, the more it does stick into my mind, and the more I can apply it to my own life and to preaching. But it takes work. It takes constant exposure. What we'll try to do again is give a flow of the philosophy as the Bhagavad Gita is a cohesive unit. Now, we said that the Bhagavad Gita is a river of nectar flowing. But how could there be a river of nectar on a battlefield. As we read the Krishna book or the Bhagavatam, sometimes we hear, rather than a river of nectar being there was an ocean of blood. But this Bhagavad Gita is actually a river of nectar on a battlefield. And the basic idea is that Arjuna did not wish to fight. And he gave Krishna so many reasons why he shouldn't fight. And Krishna counted each of those reasons. And he ultimately explained that Arjuna should fight just as an offering to him. One verse in the 18th chapter describes that Arjuna should give up all forms of religion and just surrender to him. Yes. Sarvadaman Pratyaja, 1866. So superficially, Krishna is speaking the Bhagavad Gita to get Arjuna to fight. But actually, he is not speaking for this purpose. To get Arjuna to fight. This is on one level, it's true, but actually he's speaking it for another reason, many reasons, but the basic reason Krishna is speaking the Bhagavad Gita is because the Lord is very compassionate. What he's done, he's arranged the entire Mahabharata. And the Mahabharata is one of the most popular books in the world. And thousands and thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of people have read it. And any time there is a recital of the Mahabharata, many people will come just to hear it. Hundreds and thousands of people. And within this Mahabharata, there is a gem place. And that gem is the Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna has arranged a great battle. 540 million people are going to be killed in this battle. And it's a battle that has to do with kings. And who's going to be the king of the world? Families fighting. There's intrigue, conspiracy. There's plots. There's murder, brother against brother. There's exiles. It's very exciting. And then the culmination is that they're meeting on the battlefield. Now, naturally, one wants to know who is going to win. And when we're up to this part of the Mahabharata, our ears perk up because everyone likes a good fight. And thousands of people are just ready, just waiting to engage in warfare. And in the middle of that, Arjuna and Krishna go off into the middle of the battlefield. Why? What's going to happen? Again, our interest is so much increased. And then Krishna, while our interest is so increased, places the Bhagavad Gita in our consciousness. Thousands and millions of people are killed. A great drama is enacted. But Krishna's purpose is compassion. Simply that we hear the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, there are other reasons as well. But this is the prime reason. Krishna wants us. And he staves the whole Bhagavad Gita so that we will hear this important message for all conditioned souls. This is the main reason why all this is going on. We'll now set the scene. We spoke a little bit about the Bhagavad Gita and how Krishna arranged it for the for his compassion for the living entity. But it has a history within the Mahabharata before that, that the two kings, Pandu and two members of the royal family, Pandu and Dhritarashtra, all descendants from Bharata. And therefore the history of greater India is called the Mahabharata. Dhritarashtra was older than Pandu. They were brothers. But Dhritarashtra was blind. And therefore, although he would have become king, he did not become king because of his lack of eyesight. So he was disturbed about that. Pandu had 5 sons. Of course, they're very famous. The oldest, Yudhisthira, then Bhim, then Arjuna, Nakula, and Sahadev. And Dhritarashtra had 100 sons. And who was the chief of those sons? Evil Duryodhana. Right. Now, because Dhritarashtra was not the king, and the succession passed around him to Pandu, after Pandu died, he died at a young age due to a curse, his sons were meant to become the king. Yudhisthira was meant to become the king, the eldest. But because they were too young after Pandu died, they were still too young, they were placed under the care of Dhritarashtra. And Dhritarashtra's envious sons, especially Duryodhana, immediately, although they were under Dhritarashtra's care, there were plots to kill these young royal boys. Duryodhana planned to give them poison. They had a house made that was beautifully constructed, looking like a palace, but it was made out of flammable lacquer. And please come and live in this house. We want you to spend the summer here where it's so cool. But the Pandavas realized that it smelled a bit strange in there. And then one night it was lit and burnt down, but they had prior warning by the mercy of Vidura, and they escaped. But there were so many plots to kill the Pandavas by the sons of Dhritarashtra. Finally, Duryodhana arranged a gambling match with the other Pandavas, with Yudhisthira. And a result of that gambling match, using Shakuni, Duryodhana cheated the Pandavas of their entire kingdom and exiled them to the forest for 13 years. And then after the 13 years, they had to spend 1 year in exile. And it's a wonderful, intriguing story in the Mahabharata. And it's exciting, it's heart-rendering. Like that, what happened to the Pandavas when they were in exile. They came back after 14 years, and they asked Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana, please, we want our kingdom back. We have done, honestly, as we have promised, we have gone to the forest for 13 years. It was not easy, but we went. 1 year in exile, we went. Now, please, give us our kingdom. No. Then half the kingdom. You can take half, but we are Kshatriyas, we are the royal family. Give us half the kingdom, take the other half. No, said Duryodhana. But we are Kshatriyas. We cannot adopt any other profession. We cannot be Brahmins, we cannot be Vaishyas, we cannot be Shudras. At least, we are administrators. At least give us 5 villages so each one of us can take charge of a village. Do that. No, I cannot spare enough land even to drive a pin through. So Duryodhana was so envious of the Pandavas. So envious that he, by doing that, it was immediately understood that it was going to be a war for the kingdom. Now, Krishna personally acted as the messenger from Yudhisthira. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is glorified. And the Pandavas are glorified because Krishna, Bhakta Vatsal, he served his devotees in this way. And the Pandavas are glorified as being so dear to Krishna that Krishna went out of his way to act as their messenger, a mere messenger. So he went to Duryodhana. And he said, please give the Pandavas. He preached to them. He told them, why invite this calamity? And how did Duryodhana and Karna react? They tried to capture Krishna. As a messenger even, they tried to capture him and bind him up and throw him in jail. We'll show the Pandavas and Yudhisthira what we think of his request for peace. They had a plan like that, but Krishna laughed. He laughed loudly. And he expanded into a universal form, something like the universal form. And this is mentioned actually in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. But it was war. It was war that was coming up. Duryodhana, Yudhisthira began asking all the kings in the world to contribute armies, to take sides in the war. And the Kshatriyas, the nature of a Kshatriya is that they like war, an opportunity to fight. They are fixed. Actually, in spiritual consciousness, in many ways, Vedic Kshatriyas, They're fixed in spiritual consciousness, and they know that they're not their bodies, and they know if they die in the battle, they'll be elevated to the heavenly planet. So they're very eager to fight. And they have that spirit, that hot blood coursing through their veins. So all over the world, people, Kshatriyas were rushing to take part in this great battle. And on each of the two generals, commanders, Yudhisthira and Duryodhana, were getting to the different Kshatriyas first. Please, be on my side. Don't be on Yudhisthira's side. Please, be on my side, not on Duryodhana's side. And they both arrived at Krishna's door at the same time to ask Krishna to be on their side. And we, most of us know this story, how Krishna was resting. And they both went into the room to ask Krishna first. And they wanted to be the first one that Krishna saw. Each of them wanted to be the first one that Krishna saw when he woke up, because they knew that Krishna would say, "Oh, why have you come? What do you want?" And then they would immediately say, "Be on my side," whoever Krishna saw first. So Duryodhana, Krishna was lying down, and Duryodhana stood right by the face of Krishna, just waiting for him to open his eyes. So he would say, "Oh, Duryodhana, you have come. How can I serve you? Be on my side." That's what Duryodhana was. He was right by Krishna's face. And Yudhisthira, being a devotee, stood by Krishna's feet. And then when Krishna woke up, he immediately sat right up. And he immediately saw Yudhisthira and didn't see Duryodhana. And he said, "Oh, Yudhisthira, you've come to see me? How can I serve you? What would you like? Any request, whatever you want." And he immediately began speaking about the impending war and whose side Krishna would be on. And Krishna was the cousin brother of both the Pandavas and the Kauravas. So he decided that he himself would not fight. He would take one side, but it would not be as a fighter, as a warrior. He would be impartial. But he would do what the other side wanted. And the other side, who didn't have Krishna, would have Krishna's armies, which were many, many, many thousands of men. So when presented with this, Yudhisthira had his first choice. So he immediately chose Krishna on his side. And Duryodhana was very happy with that, quote, foolish choice. He was a practical man. So Duryodhana was very happy because he got Krishna's armies. So this is how everything was lining up. Eventually Arjuna asked Krishna to be his chariot driver, and Krishna is also glorified as the chariot driver of Arjuna. What is his name? Parthasarathi. He is driving the chariot of Arjuna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, God, Ishwara, Paramishwara. The Supreme Brahman is driving the chariot of his devotee Arjuna. How wonderful. So, we'll now begin reading the verses. Now, everyone should have a Bhagavad Gita with them in the classes, in each class, because we're going to read the Bhagavad Gita, just the verses in English, in the entirety. First, I'll explain a few interesting points of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, the number 18 fits in very strongly in the whole story of Mahabharata and the Vedic literature. There are, of course, how many chapters in the Bhagavad Gita? 18. There are 18 Puranas. The battle took 18 days. There were a total of 18 Akshohinis of warriors on both sides. And in numerology, 18 is considered a very auspicious number, because in numerology, you add up the two numbers, so that 18 equals 9, which is the maximum or the highest number. So it is a very auspicious number, and it takes, it has some importance in the Bhagavad Gita. Now, the 18 chapters are divided clearly and neatly into three different parts. The first six chapters, which discuss nishkam karma, or fighting, or doing one's duty without any desires. And Jnana Yoga is discussed, Astanga Yoga is discussed. Good thing Maha Mantra is transcendental and the means for self-realization in this age. Usually the Maha Mantra comes on time.
dosha.
Okay. So the first six chapters are the basics. And they're a little complicated. And we'll spend a lot of time on the first six chapters. The second six chapters, 7 through 12, don't discuss karma yoga, jnana yoga, or astanga yoga. They discuss bhakti yoga. So the middle six chapters are considered the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. And the third six discuss jnana yoga. And they further analyze in more detail the first six chapters. And the 18th chapter is actually not included in the third six. It's a summary of the entire Bhagavad Gita. Now, why is the bhakti chapters, why are they put in the middle? There are four reasons given by the commentators. One is that bhakti is rahasya. Who knows the meaning of rahasya?
Oh.
It's a secret. Immediately the lights go out and on, just to emphasize this point. That is very secret. Bhakti is the essence of all scriptures. It is the purpose. Vedanta Krit Veda Vid Eva Chaham, Krishna will say in the 15th chapter. That bhakti is the essence of all scriptures, of all Vedic literatures. It's very secret. So it's hidden in the middle six chapters to protect it. Also, a second reason is that bhakti is one of the topics discussed, and karma yoga and jnana yoga are also discussed. And karma yoga and jnana yoga without bhakti are dead. So bhakti gives life to karma and jnana. And because bhakti is surrounded by karma and jnana in the Bhagavad Gita, it is meant to give them life. Without bhakti, these other two yogas are useless, practically speaking. They will not bring any results even. Also, out of respect, something is kept hidden. You don't immediately take your most valuable secret truths and tell it before a stranger. So when the person is a little intimate, then you will tell him something secret and hidden. So out of respect for that thing, the bhakti, it is kept in the middle six chapters. And also, because bhakti is most important, it is kept in the middle. Just like when a king is traveling with his great entourage, he has thousands of people in front of him and thousands of people behind him, all playing drums and chariots and horses and elephants like that. And the king himself, the most important member, is in the middle. So similarly, bhakti is in the middle. Okay, we're ready to begin. Now, we'll hand out our Bhagavad Gita overview books. Now, I've just completely revised them. So there are going to be changes in these, and most probably I'll either indicate them by telling you what they are, or I'll hand out sheets when the changes are major. Please take one if you're registered only. So you can follow along. Reading in the Bhagavad Gita itself and study these and use them to get an idea of how the Bhagavad Gita flows. Now, as it explains here on page 7, there are many things within the book, but we'll start on page 7, which is a summary of chapter 1, observing the armies on the battlefield. The first 27 verses are just describing the preparations for war. And then after that, Arjuna's dilemma is described, why he doesn't want to fight. But these first 27 verses, although they are very basic, they include a lot of very interesting the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and of Baladeva Vidyabhushan. And Prabhupada mainly gets his commentaries from the commentaries of Baladeva Vidyabhushan. We've also looked at the commentaries of Sridhar Swami and Ramanujacharya to get these. But mostly we draw from, of course, Prabhupada and secondarily from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Baladeva Vidyabhushan. So they put in some very interesting things, which are like gems that we'll describe. So the first verse sets the scene. Dhritarashtra said, "O Sanjay." Sanjay was his secretary. Now, after the battle had been going on for quite a few days, after Bhishma had fallen from the battlefield, Sanjay was fighting in the battle, and he journeyed to Hastinapur to tell this news to Dhritarashtra. And he's relating at that time what has happened up to this point in the battle and this wonderful dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna. Dhritarashtra said, because Dhritarashtra was blind, he could not see anything, he didn't know what would happen in the battle. "O Sanjaya, after my sons and sons of Pandu assembled in the place of pilgrimage at Kurukshetra, desiring to fight, what did they do?" Now Prabhupada explains in the purport, the last half of the purport, the word Dhammakhetra, a place where religious rituals are performed, is significant. Because on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was present on the side of Arjuna. Dhritarashtra, the father of the Kurus, was highly doubtful about the possibility of his son's ultimate victory. In his doubt, he inquired from his secretary Sanjaya, what did they do? He was confident that both his sons and the sons of his younger brother Pandu were assembled in that field of Kurukshetra for a determined engagement of the war. Still, his inquiry is significant. He did not want a compromise between the cousins and brothers, and he wanted to be sure of the fate of his sons on the battlefield. Because the battlefield was the battle was arranged to be fought at Kurukshetra, which is mentioned elsewhere in the Vedas as a place of worship, even for the denizens of heaven, Dhritarashtra became very fearful about the influence of the holy place on the outcome of the battle. Because he was bad, he did not want the good place to put its favorable influence, because that would diminish the power of his sons. Possibly his sons and the Pandavas would compromise. He didn't want that due to the influence of the Dhamma Chetra Kuru Chetra of the holy place. Or possibly the Pandavas would become stronger. Or possibly the Kauravas would leave the battlefield. No, he didn't want any of that. He wanted a battle, he wanted a war, and he wanted the Pandavas annihilated. Even though he's asking in a neutral way, his consciousness is not at all neutral. He knew very well that this would influence Arjuna and the sons of Pandu favorably, because by nature they were all virtuous. Sanjay was a student of Vyas, and therefore by the mercy of Vyas, Sanjay was able to envision the battlefield of Kurukshetra even while he was in the room of Dhritarashtra. And so Dhritarashtra asked him about the situation on the battlefield. Sanjaya said, verse 2, Drisvatu pandavanikam yudam duryodhanas tada acharyam upasangam ya raja vachanam abravit. So Sanjaya begins to describe what Dhritarashtra's son, whose name is Duryodhana, what he immediately starts doing in preparation for the battle. O king, after looking over the army arranged in military formation by the sons of Pandu, King Duryodhana went to his teacher and spoke the following words. Now Duryodhana was an expert politician, as we'll see. And because he was worried about the battle, he began to speak to his teacher, who is Dronacharya. And the words in Sanskrit are Raja, that's Duryodhana, Raja Vachanam Abhavit. That means he spoke, Vachanam means words, and Abhavit he spoke, and the commentators say that he spoke some words. He just said anything to get his purpose met. He wasn't speaking anything of great significance, but he just spoke some words. "Oh my teacher," Duryodhana speaking to Dronacharya, "behold the great army." They were looking out at the vast armies of the Pandavas. "Behold the great army of the sons of Pandu, so expertly arranged by your intelligent disciple, the son of Jupiter." Now, Duryodhana was very expert in politics. And he immediately says to Dronacharya that the opposing general, his name is what? Drishtadyumna. But does he say vyudam dristadumya? No, he says vyudam Jupiter putrena. He says expertly arranged by the son of Jupiter. And why did he say that instead of dristadumya? Because Dronacharya's great enemy was Jupiter. And Jupiter was given the benediction that his son, Jupiter Putrena, Dristadumya, would have the ability to kill Dronacharya. So he's saying that just to get Dronacharya fired up. So why was Dronacharya and Dristadumya, why were they, and Dronacharya and Jupiter enemies? Because, as explained in the Mahabharata, Dronacharya and Jupiter went to the same Gurukula. They were in the same class, and they were very, very dear friends. Dronacharya was of what vana? He was a Brahmin, right. And Jupiter? He was a Kshatriya, a powerful king. So they were very great friends. And one day, Jupiter said to Dronacharya, "My dear friend, whatever I have, because of my affection for you, I give to you." But time passed, and they grew up, and they left the Gurukula. And Drupada became a very powerful king, and Dronacharya became, as he was, a Brahmana, but he was extremely poor, so poor. And he had a son, and what was his son's name, who fights in a battle and has a prominent part in Aswatthama. Now, this boy, Aswatthama, was so poor. And he was so poor that he had never seen milk in his whole life. So some of his friends decided to play a trick on him. And they gave him some water, and they put in it some white powder. And they said, "Oh, Aswatthama, drink this. Here's a nice drink for you, some milk." And he drank it. And it didn't taste good. And his father saw it. And imagine how his father's heart broke, that he couldn't even provide milk for his son, his beloved son. So he immediately thought, "I have to do something about my poverty." So he remembered his old school friend of Jupiter. So as a poor Brahmin, he walked to the kingdom of Jupiter, and he walked in, and he said, "Remember when we were in the Gurukula together, you said I could have all of your kingdom if I wanted, whatever is yours is mine? We were friends. Now please, could you give me one cow?" And Jupiter was in a very peculiar mood, and he said, "Friendship can only exist amongst equals. Get out of here immediately." And he kicked him out. And Dronacharya was furious. He was furious. And he learned after that point the military arts to get back at Jupiter. And he performed, and he became so expert in the military arts, and he even became the teacher of the Pandavas and the Kauravas. And so much can be said about that, but we will not speak so much Mahabharata right now. But after training up the Kauravas and the Pandavas, they came to Dronacharya and said, "Dakshin, we want to give you Guru Dakshin." And immediately, Dronacharya said to Arjuna, "Go and capture Jupiter and bring him here and tie him up and place him at my feet." This is what he had been waiting for. And Duryodhana immediately stood up and said, "I can do it, I can do it. Arjuna doesn't have to do it, I can do it." And Dronacharya said, "No, be a good boy. You cannot fight like Arjuna. You don't know how powerful Jupiter is. You'll get completely massacred. Arjuna, you go and do it." So Duryodhana was even more angry. He considered that an insult from his teacher, favoring Arjuna in that way. And Arjuna went out, and the armies of Jupiter came out, and Arjuna, with his great power, he captured Jupiter, he tied him up, and he brought him. He brought him to Duryodhana, placed him at his feet, and he made Jupiter admit to being the servant of Dronacharya. This is the dealings between the Kshatriyas. My God. And then he said, no, you can have half your kingdom back. I'll take one half. And he took half the kingdom. And he released, Draupada sent him back. Draupada was not very happy with the arrangement since he was so insulted. And he performed the sacrifice, and as a result of that sacrifice, he had a son and a daughter, Draupadi and Dhrishtadyumna. And Dhrishtadyumna was going to be the death of Dronacharya, and it actually happened like that. And that is why Dronacharya was on one side, and whatever side he is on, Draupada and Dhrishtadyumna are on the other side. So just to fire Dronacharya up, let him know that he has to fight very hard in this battle coming up, he said, Draupada Putrena. He didn't call him by his name, but reminded him of his enmity with Draupada. Text 4. Here in this army, now this is also quite interesting. In the next verses. Here in this army are many heroic bowmen equal in fighting to Bhima and Arjuna. Now the first person that's mentioned that's dangerous on the opposing side is Bhima. Because Bhima was angry. He had been waiting for 15 years to kill all the Kauravas. And he had taken 3 vows. When Draupadi was insulted at the time of the gambling match, Bhima took 3 vows. He said that he would kill all of the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra. And also, he said he would break Duryodhana's thigh. Because when Draupadi was said to be the slave, Yudhisthira in gambling lost Draupadi as well as his kingdom, and Duryodhana picked up his dhoti and showed his thigh to Draupadi and motioned that she should come and sit over here. And Bhima became furious and he vowed to break that very thigh. And that, of course, as we know, later happened. And also, Bhima was very, very, he was heavy. What to be said? Not only did he say that he would kill the sons of all the 100 sons, he also said that he would drink their blood. And also he said he would wash Draupadi's hair with Dushasana's blood, because he took out the knot that was tied from the Rajasuya ceremony. He took that out, he tried to do that, and he was trying to disrobe Draupadi, so he said he would wash Draupadi's hair in the blood. And Draupadi actually had a temperament very much similar to Bhima's. And she used to chastise Yudhisthira all the time, because you're too much like a Brahmin. And she used to be actually extra favorable to Bhima, because they had similar, very hot natures like that. So here, Duryodhana is mentioning to Dronacharya first Bhima. And Bhima, during the time of the battle, Bhima went crazy. And there was a great, everywhere he would go, he was screaming loudly. And he would be catching sons of Dhritarashtra and ripping open their hearts and drinking their blood. And everyone was terrified of him because he was so incensed in this battle. So Bhima is the first person that's mentioned to be afraid of. And Arjuna was so powerful as well. And great fighters like Yudhan, Bharata, and Jupiter. So they all have, there's histories behind each of the people that are mentioned. There are also great heroic powerful fighters like Dhrishtaketu, Chief Kitana, Kaziraj, Purujit, Kunti Bhoja, and Saibya. There are the mighty Yudhimanyu, the very powerful Uttamauja, the son of Subhadra, and the sons of Draupadi. All these warriors are great chariot fighters. They are Maharathas, able to fight alone with 10,000 elephants. Now, after describing the awesome might of the Pandavas, Duryodhana, being an expert politician, he did not want to make Dronacharya afraid. So he starts off by saying, Mama sanyasya asma kam tu vishishaye tanna boda dvijotama nayaka mama sanyasya samgyartam tanrujami me. This is, now I will describe my military force. It's mine, very powerful. But for your information, O best of the Brahmanas, let me tell you about the captains who are especially qualified to lead my military force. Now the first one he mentions, he's in a little bit of a difficult situation here, because you have three very, very heavy personalities on his side. Duryodhana, on his side, there's Drona, there's Bhishma, and there's Karna. Now Karna did not get along at all with Bhishma and Drona. And Bhishma was the most powerful of the warriors, but he was a Kshatriya. And Dronacharya was a Brahmana. So if he mentions on his side, if he mentions Bhishma first, then Dronacharya is going to become very insulted and not put out everything in his fighting. And if he mentions Dronacharya first, then Bhishma might get insulted. So first he says, Bhavan Bhishma. So he says, first is your good self. And the reason why he's able to do this to Dronacharya is because Dronacharya is a Brahmana. And Bhishma being a Kshatriya will allow a Brahmana to be mentioned first. If he would have said Karna first, then Karna would have been happy, but the other two would have been furious. So very expertly he says, Bhavan Bhishmas. First on our side, there is your good self. Then Bhishma, who is senior. And then Karna. There are personalities like Bhishma, Karna, and then just to encourage Dronacharya further, he mentions Kripa, who is Dronacharya's brother-in-law, because Dronacharya is married to Kripi. And then Aswatthama, who is Dronacharya's son. So he's very, very expert at presenting things in such a way to get his ends met. So Bhishma, Karna, Kripa, Aswatthama, and Vikarna, because they're all standing around listening to Dronacharya. And Vikarna, he's not anywhere near as powerful as these others. But Vikarna, he is a son of Dhritarashtra, one of the 100 sons. And he has, he was the only one to protest in the assembly when Draupadi was disrobed. He was the only person to protest, Vikarna. And Duryodhana is afraid that Vikarna is going to go over to the other side, because before the battle begins, Yudhisthira will go out and say, anyone who wants to fight on my side, you come over from Duryodhana's side to my side, you can come now. So Duryodhana is afraid that Vikarna, because he doesn't like what happened to Draupadi, is going to defect to the other side. So therefore he says, we have very powerful fighters like Bhishma and Drona and Kripacharya and Vikarna on our side. He's very expert. And the son of Somadatta called Bodhisattva, who are always victorious in battle. So all special people are mentioned. Then, there are many other heroes, because in his party, on the Pandava side, he mentioned so many, maybe 15 or 20, and previously he's mentioned 7 on his side only, so it looks overwhelming on the Pandava side. So the next verse he says, there are many other heroes, Anye Cha. There are others also who are prepared to lay down their lives for my sake. All of them are well equipped with different kinds of weapons, and the others were said to be very powerful on the Pandava side. But ours, they are all experienced in military science. Now this next verse is very interesting. Our strength is immeasurable. Now he has to make Bhishma feel very important, because Bhishma is known, he has to encourage Bhishma, because Bhishma's favorite students are who? The Pandavas. So he has to encourage him to fight. So he says, our strength is immeasurable, and the word used, apariyaptam, because we are perfectly protected by grandfather Bhishma, whereas the strength of the Pandavas, carefully protected by Bhima, is limited. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Baladev Vidyabhusan They both translate this word aparyaptam in different ways, and just to make it more interesting. So Baladev Vidyabhusana translates it as, our strength is, as Prabhupada does, aparyaptam means immeasurable, because we are protected by Bhishma. And when Bhishma hears that, he's ready to fight even stronger. But remember, who is he talking to? He's talking to Dronacharya. So aparyaptam has another meaning too in Sanskrit, and it means insufficient. It means immeasurable, and it also means insufficient. So if it's taken as immeasurable, then Bhima gets excited and wants, Bhishma wants to fight strongly, and he gets encouraged. And if it's taken as insufficient, our strength is insufficient because we are only protected by Grandfather Bhishma, because he is he's so friendly with the Pandavas, so our strength is insufficient because of his affection for the Pandavas. Then Dronacharya gets very encouraged to fight because he's so much more needed. So in this way, the Acharyas reveal some of the subtleties of the Bhagavad Gita that make it exciting, and we see Duryodhana's expertise. Okay, why don't we stop now? Just wait 1 second. For homework, read the end up to the end of this chapter. Just read the verses if you can, and the first 10 verses of chapter 2, and these will explain all of Arjuna's doubts. And we'll go over these tomorrow, and as I said, we may have a quiz on the first 9 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita tomorrow. Okay, questions?
I was just wondering if the balance of the
Is that the same? I was thinking about that myself. Sometimes it is said yes to the descendants. Do you know?
Another is that three Bharat.
Yeah. Sometimes it is said that Bharat Varsha is named after that Bharat, and sometimes it is named said is named after another Bharat as well.
He said that Sanjaya went back from the battlefield after a few days. First night of year, so just to clear up, is there over Sanjaya is observing what happens on the battlefield?
Well, see, he had a benediction, as described in the purport by Prabhupada. He had a benediction by Vyas that he can understand everything that's going on even without seeing it. This was his special benediction by the mercy of Vyas. That's also explained in the 18th chapter.
But he wouldn't need if he went, if you fight 4 days until the Bhagavad Gita was spoken already. So he had saw everything then.
But the battlefield was huge. There were millions and millions of people fighting there. It was huge, and he had the benediction that he could understand everything that was going on. Even when he was there. He was, because Dhritarashtra wasn't there. As Prabhupada explained, he went to Dhritarashtra's room, because the old king who was blind wouldn't be on the battlefield. He would be in his capital city of Hastinapur, or rather in Hastinapur, and which isn't that far from Kurukshetra.
Krishna and Arjuna had the conversation at the very beginning of the battle.
Before the battle. Before the battle began. That we'll hear in a few moments.
And how was Sanjaya, who came a few days after the battle started, relating to that conversation?
Because he went after the fall of Bhishma to tell him, but this has already happened. So he's telling him what had already happened rather than what was going to happen. Means both. Means insufficient and immeasurable. So depending upon which way it's taken, it has different meanings and it encourages different people. It could be taken either way. Okay. If it's taken as immeasurable, then Bhishma gets encouraged. Our strength is a pariyaptam, immeasurable, because we are protected by Bhishma. But if it's taken as insufficient, then Dronacharya gets encouraged. A pariyaptam, insufficient. Our strength is insufficient because we're protected by Bhishma, who is partial to the Pandavas. So therefore we need you even more, Dronacharya. Because Bhishma's heart is divided in half, so his, even though he is strong, it is insufficient.
So we can understand that simultaneously Bhishma took it as Jonah took it as insufficient, and Bhishma took it because you said they're all sitting around. That's what it meant.
We can understand like that. But we'll see, and there's many times when the acharyas take different points of view. Prabhupada will explain it in one way, because we need to hear it in one way, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will explain it in another way, and Baladeva Vidyabhusan will explain it in a third way, and Ramanuja will explain it in a fourth way, and Sridhar Swami in a fifth way, like that. But they're all, the conclusion is always the same. But in this way, it just enriches the meanings of the Bhagavad Gita, and all are absolutely true. Any other? Okay. All right, you should please come on time.